Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Decide which side of history you want to be on. And I would start, you're from Saddlebrook, I would start by saying the costume doesn't work. You know, trim that down, buy a suit, decide where you want to be. But this isn't it.
Maricopa Community College is built on a foundation of providing access to higher education for diverse students and communities, and we're committed to that mission.
It's a roadblock. I know that we're going to continue to band together and fight to make sure that we continue to have in-state tuition.
He coached from, I think, 58 to 79. He won a lot, 176 games, I think. And here is someone who, for all his success, primarily lost his job because of the allegations of punching a player and then trying to cover it up.
And here with me to discuss the Senate's health care bill, the resignation of Greg Patterson from the Arizona Board of Regents, and the appeals court blocking DACA recipients from paying in-state tuition, among other things, are Joe Canefield. He's a partner at the Phoenix law firm Ballard Spahr. He's also served as general counsel to then-Governor Jan Brewer. And Chip Scutari, a co-founder of the PR firm Scutari and Sislak. He also covered the state capitol for many years. We won't say exactly how many, Chip, for the Arizona Republic. Welcome to you both, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start with the Senate health care bill. This bill was drafted behind closed doors. A lot of criticism about that. Since it's been released, there's been a lot of response to it. Still seems a little bit unclear at this point whether or not there are 50 votes in the Senate to pass it. Chip, let me start with you. Does the fact that the process was what it was here, does that matter as far as what the actual content of the bill is, do you think, when the senators are evaluating it?
No, it matters. That matters to people like us who are policy and political wonks and people who follow the news. But the final decision will come down to the senators and what exactly is in the bill. And if we could just pretend for 2 minutes that we're in a perfectly apolitical world, and from my quick reading of the bill, talking to healthcare experts that know a lot more about this than me, so if you're 50 years or older, your health insurance could be five times more expensive, which the AARP has seized on as an age tax.
They'd mentioned that earlier on the show last hour.
20 to 23 million people could lose their health insurance, according to the Congressional Budget Office. That's still to be determined. You could be charged more if you have pre-existing conditions. Now, this is all analysis by nonpartisan folks. So when you look at that, taking the politics out of it, do we have 50 votes or not, just looking at those things, then the impact on Arizona would be phenomenally bad. We're talking about what's at stake. 400,000 people, men, women, children in Arizona who are covered on the Medicaid expansion that Governor Brewer and a bipartisan coalition passed. 200,000 people in the ACA marketplace that need these. So basically, we've been down this road before in Arizona. We passed in 2000 something called Prop 204, which covers childless adults with Medicaid. We have a voter mandate in place to protect that. And as Joe knows, and as you know, Mark, our Medicaid system, which is called ACCESS, is the gold standard. And Arizona shouldn't be punished for not having the most efficient and effective Medicaid system in the country. And actually, this bill rewards ineffective systems like in New York State.
Now, Joe, Chip mentioned Medicaid expansion, and your former boss, Governor Brewer, was the leading politician at the time. She led the charge to expand/restore Medicaid, however you want to phrase it. From your reading of the bill and from folks that you've talked to and in your knowledge of being in the rooms, you know, when those discussions were taking place, what could this proposal do for patients in Arizona and potentially for the economy here?
It would be devastating. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. I think his summary was spot on. 400,000 Arizonans stand to lose their coverage through Medicaid, through ACCESS, which is the gold standard. And not to mention also the impact on the economy, as you mentioned. I mean, the healthcare system is a driver in our economy, and we would lose a substantial number of jobs. And then, as Governor Brewer often mentions, you know, there's the hidden tax, which is these individuals that are going to lose coverage are going to, you know, they still get sick, and they're still going to end up in the emergency rooms, and we're all going to pay for that in higher healthcare premiums. So it's not a good thing, and we really We really need, I hope our senators will push back on this.
Well, it seems like Medicaid is one of those issues that both the House and Senate were intent on rolling back a little bit, some of the expansions available under the Affordable Care Act. Why do you guys think that Medicaid, I mean, maybe it's just cost, but why do you guys think that Medicaid, you know, potentially taking health care away from low-income citizens of this country, why was that such a thing that lawmakers were looking to do?
Well, you know, I would say to that, Mark, there's an unwritten rule in politics throughout history. Once you have an entitlement program like a Medicare, Medicaid, that's pretty effective and successful, and you take it away from people, the politicians who are in office will suffer a huge blowback, I believe. So we've been down this road before in Arizona, and we've been smart about how to deal with our access population, our Medicaid population. And just because if someone has cancer or diabetes or some other, you know, horrible disease or sickness, it doesn't go away because you're not enrolled in Medicaid. So this has huge ramifications for Arizona. And, you know, I just, you know, we'll see if they get the 50 votes. But I've been more focused on what are the human elements? How is this going to work? Has long-term implications for our economy with the rural hospitals may close. Bob Meyer, the CEO of the Phoenix Children's Hospital, had an excellent op-ed in the Arizona Capital Times yesterday talking about, you know, his unique population of kids and how they'll be affected. So taking a step back from the raw politics, you know, here, if you watch, you know, I watch way too much CNN and Fox and MSNBC. It's like, can they get the 50 votes? And it's like, let's see what's in the bill first. And is it going to make our lives better, you know, heading into the 21st century? And Joe Scarborough, someone had said, you know, can we call ourselves the greatest country in the world if we're not taking care of our least vulnerable people?
Well, and there is a cost issue associated with Medicaid, and the studies I've shown show that the costs are increasing at an alarming rate. So it's a legitimate question for our policymakers to figure out how do we handle these costs. I mean, notwithstanding the human element and the devastating cuts that would be made to healthcare for these vulnerable populations, but so those discussions need to take place. It's just, you know, how quick is it going to happen? And you know, I think Governor Ducey's calling for a slow rollback if that's in fact the case. But I would urge our policymakers to really take a careful look at that and to respect the wishes of the voters in Arizona who clearly wish to fund this medical coverage for this population.
Senators seems are getting a lot of reactions and information out of a fire hose these last couple of days. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell talking about a vote potentially next week on this. So lots of voices on that. This week, an appeals court in Arizona decided that DACA students, this is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, basically so-called dreamers in the state, are not eligible for in-state tuition, mostly affecting students at the public universities and the Maricopa Community College District. We should mention, of course, KJZZ licensed to the Community College District. Joe, from a legal perspective, from your reading of this, like, did the ruling make sense to you? I mean, do you think that the judges got it right?
I think the judges got it right. You know, this decision, all three of the Court of Appeals judges decided the case, agreed on the outcome, but they disagreed on the reasoning. And that's going to have – that's an important distinction, because if this case goes up on appeal and there's a 30-day period here where the Maricopa County Community College District is going to have to decide whether it takes this case to the Arizona Supreme Court, the question as to whether lawful presence, lawful immigration status, which was really what hinged on the court's decision, a distinction between federal and state law, which is complicated but at its core, would decide whether or not the state could subsidize, you know, tuition for these dreamer students, and if the opinion as it stands now is that there really is no subsidizing, but the concurring opinion by Judge Norris, if that opinion stands, and this is all covered by a column by Bob Robb of the Arizona Republic, I think he did an excellent job of that, then it's quite possible that what the Board of Regents plans to do, or has already put in motion, which would be allowing these students to attend at cost. So it wouldn't be, they wouldn't receive subsidized tuition from the state, which is what all in-state students receive. But they would only have to pay what it actually costs to educate them, which is substantially less than what out-of-state students
pay. Kind of a middle ground between in-state and out-of-state tuition is what it seems like.
Exactly.
Do you think that policy, and that it appears that policy was written kind of for this eventuality that this ruling might come down, do you think that policy runs afoul of state law?
Well, arguably under the Court of Appeals opinion, the majority opinion, these institute, at least two of the judges, yes, probably, arguably, yes. But like I said, the Court of Appeals may not be the last word on this, and that's an important distinction, because whether the issue is controlled by how you interpret federal law and what lawful status means, or state law, where the voters, you know, and I think it was 2006 said that anybody without lawful immigration status wouldn't receive this subsidizing, is like I said, is an important distinction. So one that we'll have to see if the Arizona Supreme Court or if it ultimately answers that question.
So this could play out in the courts, like Joe's talking about, or it could be, you know, a ballot initiative to get rid of Proposition 300, which the voters approved in 2006. And, you know, since that time, 11 years ago, I think a lot of the political thinking has shifted. There's a lot more empathy for these Dreamer kids who came here through no fault of their own, who are working hard in high school. So I think we don't know which road it's going to go down, but it'll probably be dragged out for several months, I would think. So.
Chip, if there is to be a shift in that proposition, it would obviously have to go back to the voters. Would you imagine that would come from as a citizens' initiative, or would something like that be able to get through the legislature, do you think?
Probably not. Just being realistic, it would probably have to be a citizens' initiative, which we have, as we know, is very expensive. But I think there'd be a lot of national money, groups like ACLU and others, who would push this. Just because, you know, if you're and President Michael Crow of ASU wrote an op-ed, I think last November, October, talking about we want Dreamer kids to not only go to college here, but to stay here and be productive citizens in Arizona. We want them to stay.
That's Chip Scutari, also joined in studio by Joe Canefield. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. Much more to come on the NewsCap as the show continues. Good morning. Thanks for listening to the show this Friday morning. I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. This is the Friday NewsCap, joined in studio by Joe Canefield, a partner at the Phoenix law firm Ballard Spahr, also former general counsel to Governor Jan Brewer, and Chip Scutari, co-founder of the PR firm Scutari & Sislak, also a former state capitol reporter for the Arizona Republic. And guys, we're talking about the DACA ruling for the so-called Dreamers. And Chip, you talked about with the health care bill, sort of the human element, and maybe that wasn't getting enough attention. Do you think that's the same here, that we're talking about policy, we're talking about politics, but this affects, you know, a couple thousand kids, basically, you know, 18 yeah. to 20, 22-year-olds who are trying to get an education.
Sure, I agree with Bob Robb's column today that criticism or vitriol shouldn't be for these judges. They were just following the rulings. But I do think as more and more people hear these Dreamer stories of these kids who came over here, you know, it wasn't any fault of their own. They've gone to Arizona high schools, you know, productive citizens, as long as they haven't gotten in trouble. There is a big human element, and I think that's gotten a lot of local coverage. It's got a lot of national coverage over the last 4 or 5 years. So I believe if it went to the ballot, you know, 2018, 2020, on a general election ballot, I believe it would pass.
One of the other big stories of this week was a sudden resignation from the Arizona Board of Regents, the group that oversees the state's public universities. Greg Patterson, who is the chair of the board, had surreptitiously recorded a meeting he had with a couple of state lawmakers in which he said some kind of unflattering things about them. We heard one of them about the attire of one of the state representatives. Joe, Governor Brewer appointed Mr. Patterson to the Board of Regents. What did you make of how this all went down?
Oh, boy. you know, and I've known Greg a long time and really do like him. He's very passionate about a lot of issues, obviously higher education being one of them. Do I think it was a good idea for him to criticize the representative in such a way? No. I'm sure Governor Brewer probably feels the same way. You know, there's some degree of civility that's required among our officials, our public officials, and you know, we try not to cross those lines. And One thing that's of interest about this is, you know, that Mr. Gregg did resign. The governor, I think, said he didn't ask for the resignation, but something that's interesting to note is that in 2015, you know, the Arizona legislature changed the law that essentially permits the governor to terminate these kinds of board members without cause, whereas the law for many years had been if a board member, like a member of the Board of Regents or some other state board, was serving a term, then that person could not be removed unless there was some cause. And so it gives the governor a lot more flexibility to perhaps urge upon individuals like Mr. Patterson, not that that was the case here, but to maybe resign rather than have the governor force the person out.
Well, and what's interesting about that, Chip, is that, yes, the governor didn't terminate Gregg Patterson, but within about a day or so, he had a replacement named. I mean, am I being too cynical in thinking that maybe the governor saw this coming?
You're a reporter, Mark, so of course you're cynical.
That is fair.
So he might have seen it coming. The first thing that I thought of when I heard about this with the secret taping, was it's quite Nixonian on a much more smaller, sillier scale. And it's almost like it could be a new political adage. It's not the mistake. It's a promotion of that mistake you put on public email. Because really, if he hadn't shared it on public email, there'd be no public records request. This probably wouldn't have come out. And let's be honest, there's been meetings we've all had. Maybe not you, Mark, because you're pretty much an angel. But Joe and I have had
I tend to tell people when I'm yes, recording the conversation.
Yeah. No, but when we have professional conversations with clients or others, you know, it can get heated and there could be disagreements and you could sound like kind of a jerk. And so I feel bad for Mr. Patterson on that point. You know, he could have, who knows, he was having a bad day. It was wrong to criticize the guy's, was a bolo tie or whatever. I'm not a fashionista either. So, but it was quite Nixonian, the secret taping. It was pretty bizarre.
Joe, you mentioned that you've known Gregg for a long time. I mean, during the discussions about putting him on the board, did anything like this come up? Like, did anybody express a concern that, you know, people know what he thought about stuff? He'd been writing his blog for quite a while. People sort of knew his tone and what he was all about. Was this something that people might have been concerned about could potentially happen? Maybe not the recording, but sort of the tone of the conversation?
Well, I wasn't involved in his appointment, so I can't speak specifically to the conversations that took place in the governor's office. But, you know, everybody knows Gregg, and he's a prolific writer. He's had a very popular blog that most all of us in the Capitol community read pretty regularly. So his opinions and passion were pretty well known. So, and I know obviously Governor Brewer very well. I'm sure that she would have made that appointment knowing all about Gregg and I guess the risks that came along with it. You know, Gregg's done a lot of great things too, so it's sad to see him go, but under the circumstances, maybe that was the right outcome.
I do think the governor's pick of Karen Kanasik Taylor was a great pick. She's super smart, former, you know, attorney, involved with DMB, knows real estate, knows complicated issues, thoughtful. I think she'll be a terrific asset to the Board of Regents.
You know, and it's fitting because I remember as a sophomore, I think I was a sophomore at Arizona State University back in the 80s, and the first time I met Karen was when she was handing me a flyer as she was running for student body president.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's great.
That might not be something you want to remind her of right
yeah.
now. But I guess policy-wise, I mean, is it safe to say that from a policy perspective on the Regents, replacing this Gregg Patterson with Karen. I mean, does that make a difference at all as far as what the board can be expected to vote for or against?
I don't know if it'll make a difference. I would put Karen in the category of the pragmatic, problem-solving, pro-business Republican. She's probably a little less conservative than Gregg, if I had to guess. But I don't know if it would change the overall tenor. And, you know, when you're a regent, you have to put on that regent's hat where you have to put your politics aside. And, you know, there's been people on there, conservative and liberal, who, you know, for the good of the order and good of the group and the university system, they'll change their opinion or be more collaborative.
Can you take anything from her platform as a student body president candidate as to how she might do on the regents?
Did you get a candy cane or a
I don't top? Remember. Oh. I wish I'd saved the flyer now. I do, knowing her, I've dealt with her a few times over the years. I think she's an outstanding selection. I really do. I think what we need on that board is smart reasoned people who care about these important issues. And there's a lot of stuff that we don't know about or think about, you know, we don't hear about, but they have to deal with on a daily basis. And so I think that was an excellent pick, and I wish her the best of luck.
One of the Valley this week lost sort of a sports legend. The former ASU coach Frank Cush passed away earlier this week at the age of 88. Joe, you're an ASU grad. What for folks who weren't here when he was a coach and don't have ASU connections, what does and maybe did he mean both to ASU and to the Valley as a whole?
You know, he is an absolute legend, and I was just devastated when I heard the news. I mean, all of us who've grown up here or attended Arizona State University know Frank Cush. He's a household name, and I think he did more for Arizona State than almost anyone else. I was looking back at some of the history and realized, you know, he was part of the effort to establish Arizona State as a university, and I think that was a controversial measure that the Maricopa, the voters in Maricopa County had ultimately had to take to the ballot because the Pima County voters didn't want ASU to be a university. So I really think he's legendary. It's so appropriate that the field is named after him, that he's got a statue out there, and I hope that his name lives long.
Do we have time for a quick story? So
yeah.
You know, I'm a proud Providence College grad, but a lot of my friends here at ASU, I have a very good friend. I won't say his name, but he may be listening. He told me when he was about 9 years old, he came home from school in 1979 or 78, whenever Frank Cush got fired, and his dad and mom were both home listening to the radio, and he said, "Oh my, is everything okay? What's going on?" And his dad, who was a huge ASU football fan, said, "Frank Cush got fired." Like, it was a national tragedy, you know. And so he's on the Mount Rushmore of Arizona sports legends for sure.
Well, we'll have to unfortunately leave it there. That's Chip Scutari, co-founder of the PR firm Scutari and Sislak. We're also joined by Joe Canefield, partner at the Phoenix law firm Ballard Spahr. Guys, thanks for coming in. Good conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.